This is Ed Mazur, chairman of the City Club of Chicago. Our speaker today was 8th District Congressman Raja Krishnamoorthy. Congressman Krishnamoorthy spoke about the teen vaping epidemic, although he did answer a couple of questions about what's happening in Washington since he sits on the House Intelligence Committee. He announced the introduction of a new bill today dealing with vaping that will limit the amount of nicotine in any of the e-cigarettes and used in vaping to 20 milligrams or less. He's cited several studies which indicate that if the nicotine content is over 20%, this will become leads to increased vaping by teenagers and young adults. He saw this as a public health episode, and more attention will be directed at the issue of vaping. If you want to hear his views on what's happening in Washington with regard to impeachment, just stay tuned to the rest of the podcast.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon. It's so nice to come someplace they pronounce your name properly. I may have mentioned it to a couple of you before, but when I was first running for office, I said, "Hi, my name is Raja Krishnamoorthy." And the person in Chicago looked right back at me and said, "Roger Christian Murphy. Very nice to meet you." And then he said, "I didn't know the Irish made it to India." I want to say a special thank you to Ed and Jay and Amanda. And didn't Richard do just an outstanding job? That was just so moving, that rendition. And I want to say a special thank you to BMO Harris, as well as my friends at Amita Health for being sponsors today. Thank you so much. And I want to say a special thank you to representatives from Lurie Children's Hospital, as well as the Respiratory Health Association, and other advocates who care about this very important topic we're about to talk about. But before we do get started, Jay mentioned my wife Priya was here, and Priya happens to be an anesthesiologist. The joke is that we both put people to sleep. So please have a little extra caffeine before we get started. In that spirit, I'm going to go through a very short slide presentation as we speak so that you can kind of see what I'm talking about in terms of statistics and so forth. It's only 8 slides, I promise. First, I just want to outline a couple quick statistics that should be of concern to any parent in the United States today. According to the preliminary results from the National Tobacco Youth Survey conducted by the Centers for Disease Control, 28% of high schoolers are currently vaping in 2019. That's up from 21% in 2018 and almost 12% in 2017. So you can see that there's been a 135% increase between 2017 and 2019 in the percentage of our high schoolers that are vaping. As a parent of 3 children, including a high schooler, these stats hit home. In fact, during the first 3 weeks of 9th grade, my 14-year-old said to Priya and me that he was approached almost 20 times by kids asking him to vape. As a result of skyrocketing e-cigarette use among children and teens, the CDC and other leading healthcare authorities have deemed what's going on right now as a public health epidemic. While more and more teens are getting hooked into a lifelong addiction to nicotine, big tobacco companies are profiting in a big way. Vaping has grown to be a $10 billion industry. Juul Labs, which is partially owned by Altria, a big tobacco company, is the dominant player with almost 80% market share. Juul is on track to make $3.4 billion in net revenue this year. They experienced an 800% increase in revenue in 1 year, at the same time that there was an 80% increase in vaping among high schoolers. So an 800% increase at the same time, there's an 80% increase in high school vaping. Before we get into the e-cigarette industry, I'd like to first outline why e-cigarettes and vaping are such a public health concern and why we need to keep Juuls out of schools. Let me turn to the next slide. First of all, I just want to point out nicotine is a strongly addictive substance, one of the most addictive known to man. The e-cigarettes of 2019 are much more addictive and nicotine-rich compared to the devices of only a few years ago. The current Juul e-cigarettes, known as fourth-generation e-cigarette devices, contain 59 milligrams of nicotine per milliliter in its e-liquid. I'm just going to refer to the 59 milligrams going forward. Today, Juuls in the U.S. have three times the amount of nicotine compared to those sold by Juul even 3 years ago, and it is disheartening to note that 63% of Juul users between the ages of 15 and 24 did not even know that Juuls contain nicotine. 63% of kids who use Juuls did not know that they even contain nicotine. They think they're just water vapor in a lot of cases, and as we'll see later, they come in various flavors. Now, adolescent nicotine exposure is extremely dangerous. The CDC and other health authorities note that the adolescent brain basically experiences all kinds of impairments because of exposure to nicotine. Not only that, the adolescent brain becomes primed for other substance use disorders. So basically, e-cigarettes are almost a gateway substance to other substances that are even more addictive and powerful. Now, the CDC says that the brain keeps developing until approximately 25 years of age. Therefore, until the age of 25, those who use e-cigarettes are likely to face brain injury in those areas that direct attention, learning, mood, and impulse control. While nicotine addiction is the ultimate health threat for teens nationwide, there are other immediate threats posed by vaping. The CDC has confirmed now more than 1,000 individuals who've suffered severe lung and respiratory illnesses and 18 deaths in the last 2 months alone. As a result, the CDC issued an urgent warning, an unprecedented warning, during the current outbreak of lung disease. Namely, everybody who uses e-cigarettes should consider stopping now. And those who have not started should not start at all. While it appears this illness outbreak may in part be caused of illicit THC, the CDC reported that even users of solely nicotine e-cigarettes without any THC were among the victims. After examining all of this information I've shared with you thus far, I became determined to understand three things in our investigation. First, what has caused the growth in vaping among youth? Second, who needs to be held accountable for this alarming trend? And third, what needs to be done to curb youth vaping? As chairman of the Oversight Subcommittee on Economic and Consumer Policy, I launched the leading congressional investigation into the youth e-cigarette epidemic back in June. And we held a two-part hearing in July with the co-founder of Juul, in addition to numerous public health advocates. The picture you see on the screen is of James Monsees, the billionaire founder of Juul. He testified before our subcommittee on July 25th. Thus far, what we have found through this investigation is nothing short of breathtaking. Please look at slide 5. First, we found that Juul hired a creative marketing firm who hired 280 social media influencers. It's people like this who basically try to flood social media with images of themselves juuling. With youth-oriented campaigns that were colorful and trendy, these ads were intended to appeal to teens, namely to make vaping seem cool, harmless, and fun. I'd like to draw your attention to the top slide right here. This is a Juul advertisement, and this is a Marlboro advertisement. As some of you know, Marlboro was and is the number one brand that youth smoke in terms of combustible cigarettes. As you can see, the colors are strikingly similar. The shapes are even similar, and the flavors are similar. In this case, we have mint, creme, mango, and other flavors. I just want to point out one other thing briefly, which is, you see this original Juul design, which was used back in 2015, 2016. Marlboro sued Juul for copying their shapes and their colors. See the red and the white? And you see this, they call this some kind of Ruth top hat design. Well, Marlboro sued Juul, and then Juul agreed not to use this exact shape anymore, and instead they went to this design, which to me doesn't look a lot different, but enough to get Marlboro to settle the lawsuit. And by the way, we're trying to get at the documents underlying that settlement. But you see here, this is strikingly similar. And indeed, during our testimony, what we learned is that the Juul founder, James Monsees, the guy that I showed you the picture of, actually went to the Stanford University Library of Tobacco Marketing to find out what worked. And then he copied and pasted that into what you see here. The data with regard to flavors is especially striking, and I just want to go into that a little bit more. I told you about this flavor array here. They call this the flavor multi-pack. That's what they sell. This flavor multi-pack includes creme, mango, and mint. It turns out that Juul's most popular product among youth is now mint, which makes up for over 70% of its sales. 81% of kids between the ages of 12 and 17 who started vaping started with flavors. There's no doubt that flavors are really the most appealing aspect or trait of these e-cigarettes that draw youth to begin vaping. But in addition to marketing and advertising, we were dismayed to learn that Juul was going directly into schools to market e-cigarettes. We received documents which showed that Juul recruited school districts, paid these districts sums of about $10,000 apiece, and created quote-unquote youth prevention and education programs where they downplayed the health effects of e-cigarette youth. In fact, one of the kids came before our committee and testified under oath that Juul representatives came into his school and said that their e-cigarettes were quote-unquote totally safe. That attracted the attention of a lot of people. We found out that Juul was also illegally marketing their products. In violation of the law, they were marketing their e-cigarettes as smoking cessation devices and claiming that e-cigarettes are safer than combustible cigarettes. Now, why is this illegal? Because you can only make certain claims, marketing claims, with regard to these types of products by showing evidence to the FDA and having them actually approve your marketing claims. Let me turn to slide 7. Following the results of our investigation, we penned a 53-page letter to the FDA on September 5th. Asking them to review the legitimacy of Juul's marketing claims and practices. Specifically, I urged them to review the abundance of evidence which proves that Juul was illegally marketing itself as cessation devices and as devices that are safer than smoking. Well, 4 days later, on September 9th, the FDA issued a warning letter to Juul citing our investigation and specifically declaring that Juul was ignoring the law. They gave Juul until September 30th to clean up their act with regard to advertising and marketing. Interestingly, 5 days before the deadline, on September 25th, Juul announced it was stopping all advertising completely in the United States of America. They stopped all print, radio, television, and broadcast advertising in the United States. That is a big deal. Their advertising is ubiquitous. I'm sure none of you have gotten by listening to a radio station without listening to a Juul ad. In fact, there's a funny anecdote. I gave an interview talking about the results of our investigation on a local radio station, and as I was doing this interview, they went into commercial break, and Juul then played two ads. I want to point out one other thing that came out of our investigation. 2 days after the FDA cited our congressional investigation with regard to Juul's advertising, the Trump administration announced its decision to implement a comprehensive ban on all flavored e-cigarette products. In their decision, they cited our investigation specifically, including the images that I shared with you, as well as proof that flavors hook kids. Following these steps, one thing that we decided is this is a bipartisan issue, thankfully. We initiated the investigation in Congress, but the Trump administration, to its credit, including the FDA, decided to follow through and take positive first steps in combating the youth vaping epidemic. Therefore, we started a bicameral, bipartisan congressional caucus to end the youth vaping epidemic. A group started with Senator Durbin, myself, and Congressman Peter King, a Republican from Long Island. And here we have a picture of us standing before the Capitol Dome talking about how this caucus is going to become the premier forum for discussing legislative and other solutions to the teen vaping epidemic. I am a proud co-sponsor of many pieces of legislation that have been sponsored by some of my colleagues in the caucus, such as permanently banning flavors through legislation, not just through regulation, also taxing e-cigarettes the same way we tax regular combustible cigarettes. But there's one issue that we've overlooked that I've decided to tackle legislatively myself. As I noted earlier, Juuls and other e-cigarettes in the U.S. contain as much as 59 milligrams of nicotine per milliliter of e-liquid. Prior to 2016, before the prominence of these fourth-generation devices with the incredibly high levels of nicotine, most e-cigarettes contained between 10 and 20 milligrams of nicotine, making them anywhere from 3 to 6 times less addictive. Recently, the European Union, the United Kingdom, and Israel all implemented a cap on e-liquid nicotine concentration at 20 milligrams of nicotine per milliliter. This is 3 times less than the standard Juul sold in the U.S. This nicotine cap has had a direct impact in deterring youth vaping. The UK implemented its 20 milligram nicotine cap, and in 2018, youth e-cigarette use equaled less than 5%. In the United States, it equals 28%. And while youth vaping skyrocketed by 135% in the last 2 years here in the U.S., it has remained relatively stagnant in the United Kingdom, as well as in other countries. One thing is clear. In Europe, Juul is not part of the youth culture, whereas in the U.S., it plainly is. And I believe that the nicotine levels are one of the reasons. It makes you more addicted to these e-cigarettes, plain and simple. And so that's why I'm proud to announce today, at this very event, the introduction of my legislation, the End Ends Act. Here's the acronym. Ending Nicotine Dependence from Electronic Nicotine Delivery Systems, End Ends, which establishes a nicotine cap in e-cigarettes at 20 milligrams per milliliter or any lower level deemed minimally addictive or non-addictive by the FDA. We can and we must regulate nicotine levels in potent e-cigarette devices to make vaping less addictive and less appealing to youth. We just have to do it. We just have to do it. There's no other choice. Because the statistics I showed you before are just alarming and unacceptable. And so today, we're announcing this legislation. We're going to try to push it as hard as we can in a bipartisan, bicameral fashion. I'm so pleased that the Respiratory Health Association has endorsed it. Thank you, Joel. By banning flavors, ending youth marketing, and regulating the design and function of e-cigarettes, we are on our way to potentially ending this public health epidemic. But to win this fight, we'll need the continued hard work and support of elected officials, regulators, advocates, and folks like you. So I thank you so much for your attention today and listening to this presentation. I hope that you will go out and talk about this issue with others because we can't afford not to. We've seen public health epidemics before, whether it was in combustible cigarette smoking or opioids. We've seen this movie before. Let's not watch it play out again with regard to vaping. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Congressman Krishnamoorthy. Thank you very much. So this is our time for some questions, responses from the congressman. So if anybody has any questions that I don't already have, oh, I see there's a few in back. Sarah from our staff is picking them up. And we'll have the congressman answer as many questions as we can in the time that we have for us. Thank you, Sarah. The first question is from Merrill Sosa with the Illinois Psychiatric Society. And this came over the internet. You probably answered it. Has the congressman created a legislative bill regarding vaping? Do you know this lady? Okay. If so, what does his bill include? And could you go over the name of that again? It was a long series of words to remember.
So it's the End Ends Act. So ENDS, E-N-D-S, is kind of the technical term of jargon that is used to describe e-cigarettes. So the End Ends basically means ending nicotine dependency on ENDS.
Okay. And you said this is a bipartisan move. So you have a co-sponsor from the Republican Party or a number of co-sponsors already?
Not yet. We will finding them over the coming days. But we thought that it was so important to get this out sooner rather than later. We wanted to introduce it now.
Okay. Thank you. Another email question from Karen Traska with the Stanley Machine and Tool Corporation. She's also a City Club member. Larger corporations are blaming black market companies for distributing harmful products containing THC. Do you believe the upcoming legalization of recreational marijuana use will be a help or a hindrance in fighting this teen epidemic?
So first of all, with regard to, let's talk about two different issues. One, with regard to the teen vaping epidemic, that can almost solely be traced to nicotine-only cigarettes. They have no THC in them. Those are what Juul and other companies sell. With regard to the latest severe lung and respiratory injuries, we brought the CDC director, deputy director before my committee 2 weeks ago, and she indicated we cannot rule out any type of e-cigarette at this point, whether or not it contains THC. Now, with regard to the recreational marijuana use issue, my belief is that We should do everything we can to get the black market stuff out of the commerce system. And if any THC is used in vaping, and sometimes it's used even for medical cannabis reasons, vaping in that case is used as a vehicle or delivery system for the cannabis. It's got to be heavily regulated. We got to make sure that that cannabis is safe in the quantities that the doctors or others are prescribing them.
Okay, thank you, Raj. Here's someone. This is a tweet that just came in. You've got support.
Is this the president?
City Club. Well, the president issued a few other tweets today that we haven't seen anything on vaping yet. But, you know, this is a wide open forum. You may be asked a few questions about that. City Club member Susan Gordon. Susan, where are you?
Right here.
Oh, right over there. Okay. She's with the Lurie Children's Hospital. Lurie Children just tweeted her that they support your proposed legislation. Is that great?
Oh, awesome.
Wonderful.
We just tweeted it out. Becky Levente, right?
Oh, thank you.
Right now.
Thank you.
Here's her question. You think only black market vapes are bad. What research is being done to strengthen the support for public education and advocacy to end vaping?
So I don't think it's just black market vaping. I think the issue here is that any e-cigarette with nicotine levels that we see currently, you know, 59 milligrams of nicotine per milliliter, is incredibly addictive. It's incredibly dangerous, especially for developing brains. Adolescents are especially harmed by the youth vaping epidemic. But one statistic which I did not mention, because I've said so many statistics, is that 5% of middle schoolers are vaping. 5% of middle schoolers, and that number is going up. So if vaping is dangerous to people under the age of 25, think about a 10, 11, or 12-year-old and what vaping does to his or her brain. With regard to public health education and advocacy efforts, we're just starting to ramp up right now. Different advocacy groups are getting into the effort, but we need to do more, and we'll be coming up with legislation shortly with regard to this issue as well. Senator Durbin and I are working on this together, and we hope to roll it out in the next couple weeks.
Okay, thank you. William Davis with Governor State University. William, where are you? Over there. We hear about illness and deaths around vaping. His question is, are the illnesses curable? Are there treatment options? He's just trying, as I think many of us are, to understand the full circle of impact.
Thank you for the question. We actually had a witness 2 weeks ago. I told you about the CDC deputy director who came in and testified. We had a woman whose daughter almost died of severe vaping injury here in Illinois. And the good news is that she was saved, but she still has lingering respiratory problems. And so the short answer is we're just beginning to understand the nature of these injuries, and we just don't have an answer yet on whether they can be remedied completely. We think that we can. Short answer is we don't know yet. And that's why I'm so frustrated about this epidemic. I'm sorry, I'm going to go off on a soapbox here. We should never allow people to be vaping devices that have not been tested. You know, the FDA normally requires what's called pre-market testing before medical devices are allowed to be on the market, okay? And in this case, they created an exemption for e-cigarettes. We don't know. The question, Jackie was asking herself, why? I heard it. I said, I don't know.
He has great listening skills.
And so I think that we have to require a lot more long-term studies on this before, in my opinion, we should allow it to be marketed and sold, certainly in the way they have so far.
Now, I know one of the comments that you made, Congressman, was that Juul representatives, vaping people, come into schools and present programs. What do you think is going through the minds of these, I say this as a retired educator, of these retired or these current administrative educators? Are they brain dead or what?
It's very sad. Not only have they been preying on schools, but they've been also preying on different tribes. So Native American tribes, as you know, have a high incidence of substance abuse, unfortunately. That includes smoking. And so what Juul did is they came in and said, hey, we've got this excellent product that is safer and can stop people from smoking. So they come in, they pay them, they give these presentations, and they make the exact same claims, which we believe are untrue and certainly untested. But I think that there is a money issue here, folks. Surprise, surprise. Yeah. District administrators want that extra money. And so they receive the $10,000 so that these folks can put on their seminars. But the damage done and the costs of exposing those children to that faulty information is incalculable. And so we got to stop it right now. And actually, we've now asked Juul, as part of a document request, for all the school districts where they've made or requested to make these similar presentations, we received many requests from Chicago area educators who said, hey, wait a second, did they try to come into our schools? The answer is, I don't know. We're trying to find out.
Not in Chicago public schools.
Thank you.
I'm the chief health officer over my dead body.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Okay, we're going to shift gears a little bit. I'm going to ask you a question from another area. Joel Koenig with the CMT Engineers. Where are you, Joel?
There he is.
Right over there. Thank you. With all the excitement, he puts that in quotes, in Washington, is there any hope for a federal transportation bill passing Congress in the next 12 months? Faked you out, huh, folks?
Well, I think it's going to be infrastructure week again in Washington. It seems like whenever there's a major problem facing this White House, they call Infrastructure Week. And I think that the short answer is I have a hard time seeing a transportation bill coming to fruition when the White House is not willing to put serious solutions on the table to the revenue issue. So many of my colleagues on the other side of the aisle want to do an infrastructure bill or transportation and infrastructure bill. Certainly we do. And I believe that should have been the first priority when the president came into office back in January 2017. It would have been an easy win, and it's desperately needed. Certainly for me, we could use the dollars out in my district with the Elgin O'Hare Expressway. As you know, this is the expressway that neither reaches Elgin nor O'Hare. And so additional dollars, additional money is needed, and we would have been very supportive. But right now, given that we spent so much on the December 2017 tax bill, which I think is a disaster, we can talk about that later, but because of that and other issues, we are still waiting for them to put forward a solution to how to pay for it. The trick here is everybody needs to be on board with this, the pay for, so to speak, whether it's an increase in some type of fee or tax or some other measure. Otherwise, it will be used as a political cudgel, and nobody has the appetite for that.
Okay. This is from Julia Larkin with Amita Health, City Club member. Julia, where are you? Right down there. Great. I think she's referring to the bill that you're introducing or activities in Washington. She wants to know, is there or will there be a marketing component to the federal effort to fight teen vaping, especially on social media?
Yes, thank you for the question. My answer is similar to what I said before, which is Senator Durbin and I are coming up with a bicameral piece of legislation on this particular issue because you've pinpointed the problem, which is, you know, children, especially youth in that age range that it's being affected, get most of their information from social media. So if we're going to persuade them to do something different, we have to reach them through social media as well. And so this is going to be a part of our legislative solution and advocacy efforts as well.
Okay, this is from Lee Bocci with the Lake County Health Department. Lee, where are you? Oh, over there. Thank you. Similar to the 1995 tobacco settlement, providing prevention funds and advocacy that contributed to the significant decline in youth tobacco use, are there grounds for similar happenings with the vaping industry?
Possibly. Interestingly, that settlement came about through massive class action litigation initiated around the country. And interestingly, we're starting to see that with vaping as well. I think one of the first lawsuits was filed in Lake County, if I'm not mistaken. Because quite frankly, public health authorities even now are starting to see the costs of vaping, especially among youth. Hopefully, we don't have to go through massive litigation and decades of delay before we can collectively come up with a solution. That's part of the movie that I'm hoping to avoid that we saw before, whether it was with combustible cigarettes or opioids. Let's get to a solution a lot faster right now. Our children are depending on it.
Okay, thank you very much, Congressman. Shifting gears once again, question from F. Terry back there, and from Charlie Gardner right down here, who's a life trustee of Roosevelt University. They have a similar question. You're a member of one of the House committees investigating the impeachment issue. The question on everybody's mind, any updates? What about impeachment? You didn't think you'd get away with that
story. Any updates? Gosh, I have to check my Twitter feed. The news is breaking so fast on this particular investigation. It's really challenging keeping up, but it's vital. This week, well, let me back up just to kind of make sure everybody understands what is the main allegation, kind of central to the inquiry here. I've been very reluctant over the past 2 years to back an impeachment inquiry, but the evidence started to become very serious and compelling that I had no choice but to support an impeachment inquiry. And indeed, now in the House Intelligence Committee, I am helping to lead the impeachment inquiry. A whistleblower came forward with a very serious allegation. And the allegation is that there has been a scheme over many months to pressure the Ukrainian government to aid in the president's 2020 reelection efforts. In effect, the way I would describe it is the president appears, if the allegation is true, appears to be compromising our national security in favor of purely personal political gain. That is wrong. If it's true, it's illegal, and I believe it's unconstitutional. So now we've launched an inquiry into the allegations in this whistleblower complaint. We started interviews and depositions and live testimony 2 weeks ago. Last Friday, we had the Inspector General of the intelligence community before us. And by the way, I just want to talk about him for one small moment. This Inspector General was appointed by President Trump. He was the one who brought forward the complaint to our attention when acting director of National Intelligence McGuire refused to do so, despite what the law says. In effect, it's possible that we would have never known, or we would have known only after a much longer period of time, about this complaint had it not been because of this very courageous, professional, and I would say patriotic Inspector General, who happens to be a Republican-appointed Inspector General, presenting a complaint about his own boss. He had every incentive to keep that away from us, but he came forward and told the truth at risk of his career. So that lends special credibility to the allegations because he investigated them himself. This week we're continuing the depositions as well as other testimony. I would ask everyone in this room to look at the materials yourself as we're going along. Look at the complaint, look at the Inspector General report, look at the text messages that were released last week. Look at all the materials for yourself as we go forward, because this is the most weighty matter that we as a country could possibly be involved with. This is not something I relish or any of my colleagues hopefully relish. It's something, though, what we have to do because it's our duty right now.
Thank you very much, and I would second the congressman's comments. Read, listen, and then make up your mind as more and more information comes out. Okay, we're back to the issue of vaping and so on. Question from two gentlemen over here, Malcolm Weems with the Weems Way Consulting and Dinkar Karamuri with the Indian Community Outreach. Basically, their questions are your views on recreational marijuana, which they feel may only accelerate addictions in teenagers.
So, I got to go now. I'm just kidding. So, this is a very hot topic, as you know. I do support the legalization of marijuana, the main reason being that it has put way too many people in prison in the United States and in Illinois and Cook County for basically nonviolent offenses that basically lead them to a life of destitution. And we have to treat people with substance use disorders in a different way. We should not criminalize it. We should find ways to rehabilitate people and make them productive citizens. That's the primary reason why I support the position I do. That being said, I think it has to be heavily regulated, in part because of what I said before, that illicit THC contaminating the vaping supplies or any other commercial devices could be extremely dangerous. But also, we want to keep crime out of this. We want to make sure that it's safe for the intended uses. And therefore, I support that.
Oops.
Sorry.
That's okay. Thank you, Congressman. Let's give the Congressman a big round of applause.